Olivia, what's going on?
Not much, Luke. Just finished the week of work. It's Friday, so always looking forward to the weekend.
Same, same. It's funny. I've had a few guests schedule the Friday afternoon evening slot for my podcast recording. And when people do that, it's like, I know you guys are for real. Like I'll do that as well, but most people do like a Monday, Tuesday. So when you book that time slot, I'm like, oh yeah. You give a shit. So I'm excited. I'm excited we get to do this today.
Yeah.
I'm usually somebody who gives a intro to all the guests and, gives people reasons why I chose to have you as a guest on the show, because it is something that is very important to me and the people that I bring on. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why I might bring people on, and very rarely do I have people reach out to me requesting to be on. At least not like robots or people that have no affiliation with like nutrition or have credentials or people that, in my opinion, deserve kind of a guest feature. But you were somebody that reached out to me after listening to a podcast recently. And in those situations, it's a no-brainer for me because, of course, you're a dietitian, like type A. A lot of us are type A at some level, but those are the type of people that I naturally gravitate towards. And since I've followed you and since we've kind of connected, it's just been fun to follow you and see all the content you post and just to see how similar our brains think about certain things. So, with all that being said, I haven't followed you for a long time, which is why I'm excited about this conversation today. But we have a lot of good topics that I want to kind of dive into today, and it'll be fun to kind of bounce back and forth between the two. So, thank you for reaching out and thank you for taking the initiative, even though it wasn't something that was on my radar. I know it's going to be a fun convo today, and I'm really grateful that that we get to have this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Can you go and do your little intro, kind of podcast intro about your career, about your history, about anything that you feel like is pertinent, but do the typical podcast intro and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, for sure. So, my name's Olivia. My friends all go by like Liv. A lot of my clients, Coach Liv, I'm their coach to them, whether that's in a coaching capacity in person. Recently, I just moved, but I was a CrossFit coach. I also do personal training outside of just my nutrition coaching as a registered dietitian online. But I've been online coaching with my own business for about the past 5 years. And yeah, just really excited to connect. My main thing is that I love helping women ditch those diet culture habits, get it out of like yo-yo dieting, and really just kind of support their bodies with the amount of fuel that they really need to when they're thinking about wanting to build muscle. A lot of women will say they want to look toned, but they've never really spent time eating enough food or building enough muscle to look that way. And then specifically in the CrossFit space, I just love helping athletes like fuel for their performance because, again, with women especially, there's always this push to like lose weight, lose body fat, be smaller. But when you're doing really intense workouts or you just really love being active, you have to support your body with food. So I just love educating people about that and helping people support their bodies appropriately.
Tell me where that comes from. Like, because I find that, a lot of guests I have, they're either personal trainers or dietitians or in the nutrition space or in the research space, right? Like, a lot of the podcast is based on like mindset, nutrition, fitness, or all those three things combined. And I'm always fascinated with how people get into fitness or how a career in dietetics or being a dietitian ever came to be. And a lot of times I find that we all have a story where at a young age or at some moment in time or later on in life, like something happened and that sparked our curiosity. And then it kind of, dominoes into a career in dietetics or immersing yourself into the CrossFit space or the nutrition coaching space. But can you confirm or deny that by telling me how that came to be for you? Because I'm always fascinated just to see how people kind of got introduced to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, it's definitely been a journey. Just like a lot of people, I feel like it's been an evolution, especially across the years with like how fitness trends ebb and flow too. I've kind of like followed similar paths with things, but I mean, just even knowing what a dietitian was, I mean, that's even a lot of people don't even understand the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian. So The first time I heard about a dietitian was when my mother decided to learn about like bariatric surgery. She was always overweight. She always struggled with her weight, and we were always doing diets in like the household. So like even growing up, and that's like part of my journey, just being like a young female athlete, and your mom always being on a diet, and you're always thinking about fat loss or looking at calories or things like that. I was like, oh, well, what's a dietitian? You talk to someone about your nutrition all the time. Like, I already kind of knew I loved science and wanted to go into the medical field and help people that way. But after hearing about, oh, I can go to school for this and actually be a health professional in this capacity, I just like loved it and knew exactly that's what I wanted to do when I got into like high school, getting experiences, and then into college. That was just always my path. And that's helpful to know as a dietitian because our path is very specific in how you have to like do your schoolwork and go to the dietetic internship and things like that. So, I mean, obviously, you get it, but it was just like really eye-opening for me in that part of my journey. And I always just like loved food and things like that. But I think the part where it kind of changed to really understanding like fueling and helping empower women to eat enough was in my own journey that I was a college athlete. I played field hockey in college. I'm from Pennsylvania, so if people don't know what field hockey is, it's an East Coast thing. It's very popular there. So I played even from like when I was like 6, 7 years old. They'll put a field hockey stick in your hand and you'll play. So I was pretty competitive with that most of my high school career then, and then into college. And my freshman year, obviously, you're new into the nutrition space. So you're learning about all of the food and like fat loss and how to control your weight, but you're also learning like the science behind things too. And so you don't really have an understanding of what all this means. And as females, your friends are always talking about spring break and dieting and things like that. So I specifically remember doing like a fad diet, one of those like cleanses or something where you eat all vegetables one day and then all fruit the next day and then like protein and vegetables only, and like just going through that for a whole week and felt like crap at my workouts in the morning and then practice in the afternoon. Like, I just don't even know how I was feeling myself like that as a college athlete. It was just literally so silly. I would never recommend that to anyone. And then having some like different injuries throughout my college athletics, and just realizing looking back, I could have prevented all of that and been a much better athlete if I would have fueled myself appropriately and had someone telling me like, hey, this is how much you need to eat and this is when you need to eat it and why it's so important as a female athlete comparatively to someone who's not training this much. And I just had no idea because you just see things on the internet as a female, like, oh, 1200 calories, or you know, this is what you should be eating, you know, juice cleanses and things like that. And that's how I was feeling myself as a college athlete. And I just am like, wow, that's crazy. So that's how I kind of got to this point of wanting to actually help people.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, it sounds like there was just like everybody, right? There's all these individual experiences that create this big, just like melting pot of influence of like, hey, you know what? This is stuff that's been part of my life for a significant amount of time, and this is something that just feels right. When you get to the point of like deciding what your major is in college, for example, I feel like you kind of lean on those past experiences to kind of help guide you a little bit into what. Really, it's a big decision. It's like, oh yeah, am I going to be an engineer or am I going to try and do pre-laws? It's like, no, you know what? My mom had, bariatric surgery and I was an athlete. It's like, no, the fitness and the nutrition thing kind of makes sense a lot of times in those situations. So thank you for that. That was very thorough. If it's okay with you, I want to poke around just like the bariatric surgery and your mom and you kind
Yeah.
of going through that and being exposed to a dietitian at that age. What age was that when you and your mom and everyone kind of went through that together?
Yeah, I think I was around 16 years old.
Yeah. So probably, yeah, in high school, kind of in your teen
Yeah.
years, was that, and not putting you or your mom on blast, but I think there's some conversations to be had around this, but that was something that you and your family talked about, or did your mom explain to you like, hey, this is what's happening. This is why this is happening. Or was it more of like, oh, this thing happened and I'm just watching mom kind of do her thing, and I'm just like observing from the sidelines. Like, what was the family dynamic, and how were the conversations around some of that? Because that is a very big procedure. And for the people who don't know bariatric surgery, I'm not sure what your mom had, but there's a ton, right? There's like the Roux-en-Y, which is kind of like just connecting part of your stomach to the small intestine. There's like the sleeve, which is cutting out pretty much half your stomach, or like 80, 90% of your stomach. The band, which I don't think is very common anymore. Just different types of like, controlling the size of your stomach to help people eat less. But what was that like, if you can tell us, or if you remember that as you guys were going through that together?
Yeah, no, for sure. Happy to share all of this because I do think it's really important. And I do work with some kids now, and I am big on talking about positive self-talk with body image, but also parents being aware of like what they're talking about with their kids or around their kids with nutrition, or whenever parents are saying like to me that they don't want to track their food around their kids, I am all in support of how they want to raise their kids and be aware of that as well, because I know that it definitely affected me. So with that, like my family dynamic, I grew up with a single mom and an older brother. So that family dynamic is a little different in the fact that we were very close. So my mom always shared everything, whether that was good, bad, whatever was kind of going on. And so, especially with this procedure, it was very much, I was curious. So I was asking lots of questions, and she was like, yeah, like, do you want to come to my appointments with me? Like, I'll come, you can come with me. And so I really got to see everything that was happening from like every aspect of it in the steps in her journey. So that was really interesting, obviously, just from learning and thinking like, oh, do I want to do this with my own career field? But then also then impacting me from my food choices. Well, she's buying certain things for her to eat, so then we're eating together. And then I felt very weird as I was in athletics and sports too, so looking at her portions on her plate versus my portions, I think it definitely affected me and like how I was feeling myself.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I asked that question because I know you can probably share the same observation too, but when you work with clients, you work with people, you post content to Instagram, you connect with people, whether it's in a clinical setting or an online coaching setting, it's like a lot of what people's like nutrition knowledge, like how that's formed, how that's shaped, is like what we did or what we observed or what we talked to parents about or whatever it was as we grew up, right? Or as we were kind of exposed to that and kind of what our parents did and how they fed us and for better or worse, right? But like this is an example where, yeah, mom gets bariatric surgery. Like it's a very extreme kind of example of like, weight management and intervention to control some of these things. And more often than not, it's like, yeah, mom was always doing Weight Watchers, or you alluded to, yeah, mom's always tracking macros all the time, or mom was always going low carb or keto around the new year because she was trying to undo what she did around the holidays, right? Like you hear these stories a lot, and I know a lot of people listening, can kind of nod their head in agreement with like, oh yeah, like I know people that did that, or my mom did that. And again, it's not to look back and feel shameful or to think that our parents did a shitty job on anything. Like people do the best that they can. But I think these kind of observations and these things can be, yeah, they could be really impactful, and they can make positive impacts or negative impacts, whether that was intentional or not, later on in life. Unfortunately, you went and you chose a career path in dietetics, and you were exposed to a dietitian early on, and you had a very different experience compared to a family who, yeah, maybe mom and dad both got bariatric surgery, and the kid, always struggled with weight, and they ended up getting bariatric surgery later on. And they, just grew up in a very different household with very different relationships, very different education or information levels. And I find that a lot of times it's just acknowledging where we came from and then not being afraid to change that narrative, or just like explore more, or do things differently than how our parents did some of that stuff. Because a lot of coaching I find is maybe unlearning past behaviors, past just kind of like mindsets, past experiences, and trying to get them to a place where they're seeing things a little bit differently, or seeing things through a different lens versus what they've always been used to. So just a very interesting experience. And it's interesting to see you come out on the other side. And I think that's a really good example, because I think a lot of people can kind of relate to that with like stuff that their parents did when they were growing up.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, I think my education, being that I went into the dietetics field, then helped reshape a lot of that because I was able to learn the science of nutrition for myself and how my body actually worked. And it wasn't just based on what other people were telling me or my lived experiences, it was actually understanding the science. So I think that helped really reframe and shape from like a positive perspective.
For sure. Were you playing sports at that time as well? Or did that, kind of come later on?
Yeah, I definitely was playing sports. I was always like an active kid. I was always in doing different things. And so for me, I think that the sports then helped give me a reason to fuel my body probably more than I would have if I wasn't as active at that time.
Cool. And let's fast forward to now or I mean, you mentioned CrossFit, into personal training. Are you still playing field hockey at all? Or is that something that when you graduated kind of ended? Like, tell me about that. I
Yeah.
saw you see you smiling. Tell me about that transition after leaving, because I think this is a really important concept of like, we're all going to go through different seasons, different changes, different identities, different responsibilities, like who you were in high school and who you were playing field hockey in college to who you are now as an engaged, soon to be wife potentially, and all these cool things that get to come. Like that's a very different life than you 5 years ago. And I think
Yeah.
a lot of us, we get caught up or we're like so tied to our identity to who we were 5 years ago or even last year. And it can be very difficult to move on when different things come up. Was that transition difficult for you, like coming out of college, or how was that like process going from kind of like an education, like kind of athlete, student athlete to like a working professional doing different things.
Yeah, no, I love this question so much because I do vividly remember the transition and even the transition in a lot of my different like fitness journeys. Because I will definitely say it's been an evolution too of like my athletics and fitness in general. But so, for again, those of you who don't know, field hockey is primarily a fall sport. So obviously people can train in the winter and whatnot, but our season as a senior in college ended in the fall, so around the December timeframe. And then I had all of spring semester to basically figure out what does that mean for me as an athlete, or what we call people NARPs, non-athletic regular people, in college, and kind of fill that time. So I was, because we did have a strength and conditioning coach as an athlete in college, I kind of just became friends with this person and was like, hey, why don't you try your new programming out on me? And I'll kind of like try it out and you can try different things and see how it works and stuff and whatnot. So I kind of just hung out with them and trained. And that's whenever I got actually a lot more into strength training and just enjoying like my time in the gym. And so then that was an easy transition for me. Then once I got out of college and did my dietetic internship, like I was the dietitian that was actually at the gym still, like 4 to 5 days a week during that time, and just kept lifting and kind of creating that foundation for myself from like a strength perspective. But I will say from like a nutrition perspective then, though, in my fitness journey, it was still difficult. I still found myself like weight cycling or wanting to try different diets or different things, even just from myself as like a body image perspective. And then that kind of led down different things of like me becoming a certified personal trainer because I was just so into it and it just made sense and, different things like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it sounds like there was some doors that were opening as another door was closing, at least in like
Yeah.
college athletics and certain things, which I think is great. And I think most people will maybe share that experience, however that pertains to them. Maybe it's not them being a collegiate athlete and then doing something different, but for most of the time, like a lot of times there's these transitional states that we go in where we're fizzing out of things and we're picking up new things, or you're picking up new interests, or you're hanging out with different people that do new things, and you're hiking more, you're playing, different sports, or pickleball, you're getting to the gym, or you're doing CrossFit. It's like usually like somebody doesn't come to a complete halt before they start to try and figure out what the fuck they're gonna do next, right? And I feel like
Yeah.
a lot of people can share that sentiment. Now, there's a lot of people that don't sometimes, right? There's a lot of people that, we get through our 20s or our 30s, and you have kids and you have careers. And, there's a lot of stuff going on. And I bring this question up because I think this is a really good transition. And this is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is like this feeling of like starting over or starting fresh or starting new. And it's very pertinent to the season of life that we're in right now, which is New Year's. It's January 3rd, right? This is kind of the time where New Year's Eve and New Year's resolutions are kind of in full swing and people are kind of just like, and I think it's for the best, but just kind of like future forecasting what they want their year to look like or what goals they want to accomplish, whether it's fitness, personal, finance, relationship, whatever related, right? But I feel like some people can kind of get slapped in the face with this feeling of like, I have to completely start over. I have to completely do things, everything different. And I feel like that alone can be a big barrier for people, a very intimidating and just kind of hard to overcome, especially in the beginning when we're trying to build momentum. So one of my questions for you is like, do you ever notice that or with your clients as well? And is that a conversation that you're having with anybody? But how can we help people appreciate the fact that it's okay to start over? It's okay to feel like you're starting from scratch, or it's okay to feel like this is a new, fresh year, or new clean slate, or a new week that you can start to, build some habits, behaviors, whatever going forward. But how do we get people to appreciate the fact that that's not okay? And that's not necessarily a bad thing or people like taking steps backwards, because I think we can feel really shameful when we kind of have this mindset sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love this because this has definitely been something in my journey that I felt like in the past kind of held me back from being consistent, and kind of getting off of that weight cycling journey that I was on for years. But really, I think it's just initially stopping and reflecting and then figuring out what worked well and what didn't work so well, right? So I think everyone loves a fresh start. Everyone loves a new beginning. That's why people love to make New Year's resolutions, goals, and things like that. And then I do see some, especially now with social media being so big, some people are like, oh, I'm not even going to make New Year's goals or resolutions because I don't even stick with them. And I just end up getting disappointed in myself and stuff. But is that a reason that we should just not set goals at all? I don't know. I would kind of disagree. I think it's more of them that fear of failure that's keeping them from setting the goal when it's not the goal that was the problem, right? Like with any diet or nutrition goal or fitness goal that you have, it might have just been your approach or your strategy that you took in the goal itself. So if you're reflecting on goals that you've had in the past or things that you've tried in the past, I would tell someone is if that goal is still important to you, set the goal. Like, be excited about it, get motivated, get pumped, and then let's find a new approach or a different strategy that you haven't tried before, or come up with an idea and a strategy that will work well for you in your lifestyle, in the life like transition or stage that you're at, because our life changes. And sometimes, right, like I'm sitting in Wyoming, and last January I was in Florida, and I wouldn't have picked or even thought that I would be moving to Wyoming. So, like, life changes happen, and sometimes that can derail us from our goals, because things happen and whatnot. But I definitely think that we should still be setting the goals initially. And I definitely want people to feel empowered to have that like fresh start and not be afraid of failing, or letting that hold them back.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I feel like you acknowledging and bringing up this point where it's like it's more so the approach and the actions and the things that you do and the lack of those things most of the time that can actually prevent people from getting to those goals in the first place. And that's where like even circling back to like your experience and a lot of people experience like dieting growing up or watching mom and dad do different things or being surrounded by friend groups or in sororities or whatever, and everyone's doing the same thing. And it's like, those are usually the things that we think about or lean back on as we're setting these goals. And it's like, oh yeah, in order to lose 20 pounds, like I'm going to need to do what I did back when I was 20 years old and prepping for spring break with all my friends and just cutting out and just eating fruits one day, vegetables. And that's the thing that we lean back on. Like those are the experience that we had, and we've had maybe some success, like depends on what your definition of success looks like, right?
Right.
But we think back to those experiences because we got some sort of progression that we found value in at the time. And that might be the thing that we're tapping into or remembering. And that might be influencing some of our decisions, where I think the problem, and to agree with you, is like, we really need to appreciate what it's actually going to take to get to those goals. Like setting goals and setting things that are realistic and attainable and all that good stuff. Of course, that's part of the conversation. But I think more importantly, the missing link for people is like understanding the trade-offs, acknowledging what it's going to take to get there. Because usually if people have, it's either they're really underestimating what it's going to take to get there, or they're not even acknowledging that there's things that they're going to have to do or sacrifice or give up or do more of in order to get there. And I find that it's not appreciating all of those things that, again, keep people stuck or keep people from getting to where they want to be. And that's the part where I think New Year's resolutions can be very helpful and very fun, where we're setting goals, but unless we're actually setting an action plan, unless we're actually acknowledging the things that it's going to take to get there, things we have to do differently, or asking ourselves how stuff is going to be different this time because you did the same shit last year, man, people are going to continue to miss the mark in some of these situations. And that's obviously not what we want for people, but that's what I want people to take away, is just like, how do we have to approach things this time to actually get us closer to where we want to be? And that is where the magic happens right there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And even just like thinking about the resources that you might need, right? Like obviously we're coaches. I will always advocate because I've been an athlete and I just always love the coaching relationship, but hiring someone to help you, it does take a place of vulnerability and actually like reflecting and figuring out like, well, who is going to be the best person to help me on this journey? Because it's, you know, obviously you probably have a different approach or a coaching style than I would with my clients and whatnot. So it's, you know, finding someone that's going to meet you where you're at and be the best fit for you. But making sure that you have the resources and the accountability and everything that you need, while also being able to within yourself be vulnerable and show up for the work that it's going to take to reach that goal.
Absolutely. As you're kind of working with clients this time of the year, and even your messaging on social media, and I mean, even quite frankly, what we're talking about today, are there different things that you find yourself doing or talking about or saying or having conversations with your clients a little bit more this time of the year compared to summer, for example, or in the fall? Or just, is there anything unique about this time of the year? I'm just curious if anything comes to the top of your mind that can help your clients and can kind of help them start to think a little bit big picture of what this next year is going to look like and what we need to start doing daily, weekly, monthly, like some of the trends we want to see. Or do you find that there's a lot of consistency between whatever time of the year somebody might start? If somebody's listening to this in August and they're getting excited and they're going to do these things, like, do those same conversations apply, or are there different things that you're pointing out this time of the year for people?
No, yeah, I like this question. I think right now is when people take more of a big picture approach. I think they look at January and they're like, what is all of 2025 going to look like? So it's a really good time for me to help them plan out their entire year based on their goals and help them break it down a little bit more incrementally. Like you were kind of talking about, maybe like 90-day goals, 60-day goals, or 30-day goals, or weekly goals, and things like that, that will actually help them see the big picture of like, oh, this is going to take some time to reach that big goal that I have, but that's okay. I can still be excited about it. And now I actually have a plan for my week and for my month of how, you know, my coach can help me get to where I want to go too. So I think right now that's more of the exciting part, especially even as a coach. I love helping people see like the big picture plan. But then I would even say too, like, the things that come up consistently, I'm still asking people about what didn't work before, because sometimes even when I'm creating a plan or we set goals for like the week or the month with my current clients that I've worked with for months, it's like they didn't reach the goal and we're looking back at things and it's like, okay, how can we adjust the plan? Well, what triggered you to kind of fall off, or why didn't we hit the mark of hitting a 10K step goal for at least 20 days of the month or something like that, right? And then we're just kind of working backwards to help them make a re more realistic goal and reset the mark of how long it's going to take to get there. So it's still pretty similar, but I think there's always that point of reflection and kind of talking, looking back at things and talking through that with them.
Yeah, well said. Well said. I couldn't agree more too. I feel like there's more similarities than there is differences when it comes to goal setting any time of the year. This time of the year is just a little more unique because you kind of have a reason and excuse to reflect a little bit more, where people, maybe don't have the easiest time trying to think about what their last week or month or, 3 months of the year look like when it's like midsummer and they're prepping for a wedding or a bachelorette party that they're going to get to go on. It's like this time of the year is very unique and fun. It's also very motivating because people usually come off of, 2 month bender and they just treat their body like a garbage disposal for 2 straight weeks, right? Like finishing the year. So it's like people usually feel pretty shitty, and it's also pretty motivating for a lot of people to like do dry January and to go meal prep and shop this week and to get into the gym and join them, go to the gym again or join a new membership. Like it is a good time of the year because there's a lot of, I think, confounding variables that make people more serious and excited to start fresh or to do things differently. But I love what you said, because it comes down to like, what's the big goal? What are the things that we're going to be shooting for? And then how do we break that down and again into, a 3 month stretch or a month stretch or daily? Like, what are the things we need to do consistently? And the questions that I asked my clients this last week, because I asked a similar question of like, what are your goals and what are the things that you need to keep doing? What are the things you need to do differently? And then what are the things that you maybe need to do less of to help you get there? And I think when you ask yourself some of those questions, among other things, it can really help you be a little bit more honest with yourself, a little more objective. And it's when you do that, that's when you can start giving yourself permission to make changes or to do things differently and to actually, for people, just do things a little bit differently this time around instead of just wishing and hoping for things by doing the same thing over and over again. And unfortunately, just not feeling like they're making that, significant progress over time. So yeah, I love that. I think that's a really good time. But like just taking that 10,000 step for 20 day, I love that goal, right? It's like somebody thinking is like, oh yeah, over the course of January, 20 days, I need to hit 10,000 steps. They get to February and it's like, shit, I hit 10 days of 10,000 steps, right? And you have Olivia asking like, what went wrong or what happened? And it's like, yeah, you know what? Like maybe the days were shorter, the weather was colder, there are things I wasn't accounting for. And then that's when people are able to be like, oh yeah, you know what? Well, I do have a space in my office and I can maybe get a $100 walking pad, and maybe that's something that I could do differently. It's like when you start to like set these goals and objectives, you can reflect and you can future forecast. Like that's when you see a lot of proactiveness instead of just people being stagnant all the time and just wishing things were different. So I think that's a great example.
Yeah, and I would even add on too of like your mindset, right? Because I think when you talk about your goals with someone like a coach or maybe even just an accountability partner, coaches are going to bring up things that you didn't think about, right? And because we've done this with other clients in the past, we can kind of help streamline them and give them more specific goals that are probably a little bit more realistic for their lifestyle and just understanding that that sometimes we ourselves, when we're setting the goal, and if we don't have that accountability measure, we'll make them a little too lofty almost and not be as realistic with ourselves and the stressors of life or schedules or things like that that we have. But even like our mindsets, especially if it's something that we've, tried to do multiple times, right? We talked about people starting over again, and the word again brings that fear up for people. So I think like maybe it's their mindset that they really have to work on and shift to a different like perspective for their goal and what that success looks like for them. And sometimes it's just doing some more inner work that isn't always the most fun or isn't necessarily going to push the needle forward from a scale perspective if your goal is like fat loss or something from a body composition standpoint, but actually what's going to help you be successful long term.
Yeah, and I'm so happy you bring up all those things, especially the scale, because that's something that I also wanted to talk about today. And if we're being real, like when we talk about goals, when we talk about aspirations, and we talk about weight loss. Like, we talk about a lot of these things. Like, the scale is one of the measures of progress that most people, I'm making assumptions here, but just most people have a body weight scale at home. Most people have weighed themselves throughout their lifetime. Most people have had this perception of what the scale is, or what information it's giving them, right? Like, everyone has their own unique experiences with the scale. And the thing that doesn't change a lot for people most of the time, especially when setting new goals and trying to work towards better health and fitness, but the scale is something that's pretty constant, in the sense that, like, people tie a lot of worth, a lot of value, a lot of, they have the scale hold a lot of, just value to how things are going for them. And not to say that's a good or a bad thing. You and I both can argue why the scale is a very good and can be a helpful metric of progress, for a certain amount of people, or for certain people. But there is this other side of the conversation where the scale isn't everything, right? And the scale isn't something that's going to be the thing that makes you happy at the end of the day. Or you seeing a number at the on the scale that you thought you were going to see isn't going to be the thing that magically flips that switch, and now you're a happier and more confident and better person, right? And so I'm happy you bring up the scale, because this is usually something that people start stepping on, right? People start incorporating in their data tracking regimen, if they're, tracking data at all. But how can we, knowing that most people probably are going to use the scale this time of the year, and if people have fat loss goals and are trying to lose weight in the next, 2 months to 3 months and year and beyond, how can we get help people just, like, build a better relationship potentially with the scale? Or at the very minimum, just have, like, a level of neutrality when stepping on the scale. Like, what are some things that we can kind of put in people's minds as they start using that as a kind of a metric of tracking progress here, and use that for benefit instead of letting it, dictate their day every single day and let them fuck with it as much as they do?
No, I love talking about this too, because obviously it does impact a lot of people and their perspectives in their journey of, what success looks like as they're measuring that. But for me, in my practice, when I'm working with clients, if people have a really negative relationship with the scale and don't want to use it, I'm totally fine with them not using the scale, not stepping on it whatsoever, at least for a period of time. Right. Sometimes just putting it away and helping them understand what actually goes into affecting the number on the scale. I think that's where you were talking about that neutrality aspect. Like, sometimes we have to put it away for a little bit and really educate ourselves on what's actually impacting the scale day to day, and then slowly pull it out and start to take steps forward and just gathering data. I usually like to tell my clients, hey, we're like doing a science experiment here. Like, you are gathering the data for me, and I am going to be the one that evaluates the data and help make adjustments in your protocol from a nutrition and exercise perspective, rather than you looking at the data and trying to analyze it on a day-to-day perspective and then trying to decide if you're going to give me the data or not, because you are deciding whether it's good, bad, or otherwise, So I think from the variables aspect of the scale and just helping people understand that is like, it's not just your food. You do not need to feel a certain way about the number on the scale related to the food that you're eating. Yes, it's one variable, but also how our metabolism, how our digestion is actually working from a functional standpoint impacts the number on the scale. How we're sleeping impacts the number on the scale. What our stress is like, how our hormones are interacting with each other from a day-to-day perspective. There's so many other factors beyond just how much food we're eating or the types of foods that we're eating that goes into what the number says on a scale from a day-to-day perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And you bring up a really good point, where there are situations where not using the scale, or if someone's, like, very resistant to using it, like, that's probably a great thing to do. I honestly, more often than not, am like, follow your intuition, follow your gut. Like, you've had your own experience with that. If you know what that does to you, and that's not something that we need to take into consideration right now while you're doing, or while you're working on other things, like, I'd say that's a net positive for a lot of people at the end of the day, if they're in that headspace, right? And it's just so interesting to me, though, because the scale is, like, it's one of those things where, like, It's hard to differentiate, like as a coach, and we're not therapists either here at the end of the day. We're not trying to act like we know everything, but like there's kind of a there's an opportunity where there's like opportunity for exposure therapy almost and complete avoidance. And you know, sometimes I don't know what the answer is for some of those things, but getting to the place for a lot of people where you kind of expose them to that, you do exactly what you say, where we're appreciating what goes into that number. We're not letting that number dictate or make the decisions that we're going to make later in the day, right? We're not letting that number, tell us who we are or what we're worth at the end of the day. It's like those are all conversations and really important things to kind of help people get over that fear that they have, or letting their progress or letting their, mental sanity ride on what that number says first thing in the morning every day. And quite frankly, like complete avoidance of that over time, like it could work for people, but I think there's a lot of people, at least in my experience, that have had that situation. They start to weigh themselves. They start looking at daily, weigh-ins, and they look at averages instead of every single day, every single moment they weigh themselves. They start understanding where they at in their cycle, right? Like you alluded to, and what food they had the night before, and what glycogen is, and how much stomach content can influence this, and water re retention, and weighing after a workout or weighing after a weekend of, traveling or getting on a plane. It's like, I think when people can start to objectively look at all the things that influence that number day to day, it can help people appreciate the fact that like, oh yeah, this thing's going to change and this isn't something that's like, deciding my progress over time. But when you can start to appreciate all that, and then you look at the data, you look at the trends, you look at the monthly averages over time, that's when you start to see this progress over time. And that's when people can actually start using the scale as a really helpful tool to kind of help them keep track of where they're at, or make different decisions, or push farther in a fat loss phase, or spend more time at maintenance, or understand that, the weight that they want to see on the scale has nothing to do with the way they want to look. And maybe that's the thing that helps them disassociate from it. It's like, once you can kind of get over the fear of weighing yourself, that's when I think so many opportunities open up for you to think differently about your performance, your weight, your physique, your health, your mental health, like all these things that are far more important than what some arbitrary fucking number says on the scale when you weigh yourself on a random Tuesday morning.
For sure. It also just drives me nuts when people are like, oh yeah, and I just like weighed myself, but it was like after dinner at the end of the day. I'm just like, oh, why are you getting on the scale after dinner at the end of the day? Like there's so many things that like can be affecting your weight at that time that we're not even getting really a true number. So I'll just say that too.
Exactly. Are there things, and I think people mostly know about in your practice and in your experience, and even with yourself, are there things in addition to the scale, or maybe completely separate from the scale, that you're having clients look at, you're reminding people to look at, you're telling people to look at, right? Because I think the scale can trump a lot of those things unless we're being told or we're proactively looking for other stuff to kind of work around that as you're working through some of these kind of, scarcity mindset that we might have around weighing ourselves. But are there other metrics, things that you like to track in addition to that? Or is the scale is one of the things that you use primarily with people?
Yeah, good question. I think it really depends on the person and like what their goals are and what tools we're going to use in order to measure progress, right? Like I'm sure you have all of your clients fill out something that says like, "Hey, what are 2 to 3 measurable goals that you want to achieve by the end of like working with me," right? And being that a lot of my clients come to me for performance goals, or they have bad periods as females and want help with their hormones, or maybe have struggled with their weight or something and they do want to change their body composition. Sometimes it means that the scale isn't, the number one thing that we're looking at. I think that other things that we can use are going to be like progress pictures, right? Like just seeing like what your actual physique looks like in the same pair of clothes, sports bra, swimsuit, whatever, on a monthly or biweekly basis, however often you want to take those, can be really helpful when we don't want to use the scale or we just want to use another tool to see how we're progressing, especially when it comes to changing people's body composition. Your weight could fluctuate like 2 to 3 pounds, but your body composition could look really different in a matter of 4 to 6 months, when we're working on these things consistently. Same thing with measurements. A lot of my females who maybe don't want to use the scale as much, we might use it on like a once a week basis or something like that. We'll also take measurements around their waist and their hips, just to kind of look at that body fat, composition, because a lot of people want to lean out, especially females in their abdomen and things like that too. But other things, even just as biofeedback too, especially from like an athletic perspective, from performance, is like, how is my energy, before a workout, during a workout, after a workout, depending on the intensity of the workouts, right? That can really impact, mood changes, our hunger cues, and things like that. Like I alluded to, even in my past with, weight cycling, something that I realized for myself in my own journey was that, like, I only know tracking my food around weight loss and when I'm trying to lose weight. I actually never, 4 years ago, tried to even track my food from a maintenance perspective and being like, hey, am I actually eating enough food to fuel my body and actually feel my best? And for some people who have maybe weight cycled, like maybe this is your year where you're like, I'm just actually gonna track my food and educate myself around how much I really need to eat to maintain my weight to get out of this cycle of always like restricting and always having this mindset of eating less food.
Yeah, I love that. So super well said. I can't help but think, like, when you were talking and talking about all these other, and that was kind of a leading question, because of course we all are going to measure shit outside of the scale, right? Like, it's just, it's not a good metric if that's the only thing you're looking at. Again, when used in conjunction with 10 other things, like, that's when the scale and these things become a little less serious, right? And we can start to appreciate the big picture of a lot of this stuff. But yeah, like you said, body measurements and how you fit in your clothing and how you feel around, your cycle every month and what your digestion is like and like how your clothes are fitting and what your strength gains are and how your performance is and what your energy is later in the day, or you objectively looking back and thinking like, oh, I actually hit all my workouts for the week consistently for the month or got my steps in. It's like, man, when you start looking at all those things together, it almost takes less pressure off of yourself sometimes, and it takes less pressure of like your daily weigh-ins and in the emotions that you feel from that. And quite frankly, sometimes it can make it easier to see progress on the scale, ironically, because you're focusing your attention and looking at so many other things, and that's the stuff that's keeping adherence high, keeping you showing up more consistently, at a higher capacity than you just kind of, like you said, whenever I track, I find myself just eating as little as possible because I want to see the scale move down. And all of these habits are kind of like a domino effect of me just wanting to change this one thing. When it's almost like you give yourself permission to eat enough protein and to diet on as little amount as calories, or sorry, not on as little amount of calories as possible, and like the highest amount of calories you can diet on, right? It's when you start appreciating the fact that, like, yeah, you know what, making strength gains or improving my body composition or building more muscle, it's like those are the things that come a little bit more easy, are likely going to get you to a place where you're feeling more happy, living in a place of abundance. But a lot of it comes from detaching from the scale and just trying to be the leanest or the smallest number you can see on the scale. And you alluded to this whole like athletics and performance and making strength gains. And I love hearing that because that's something that I say, especially to females a lot of times too. But it's really hard to get that buy-in sometimes. And having someone like yourself that also preaches that, that also works with that with their clients and is somebody who lived that themselves, it's like getting to the side where you do give yourself permission to do all of these things and, kind of take some of the arbitrary timelines off of this stuff and start thinking about what the next year is going to look like and what you getting and lifting 3 times a week is going to look like and how you can make that practical and how you can start to actually fuel with a little bit more intention instead of just trying to just stick to this deprivation mindset whenever you flip the dieting switch on, which is kind of what a lot of people can kind of experience, especially as they go through New Year's resolutions and starting to change the way they look. But I just find it's fascinating because the scale is usually the common denominator between destructive, like self-deprecating, like just like totally restrictive mindset. And not that you have to completely get rid of that, but when you start to include other things around that, that's when I think things become a little bit easier for people sometimes. And that's when they can start seeing things just on a bigger scale, and they can start to appreciate all the other inputs of what it means to live a happy, healthy, just strong as fuck life going forward.
No, I couldn't agree more with all of that. And I think too, if anyone is like listening to this and they do maybe have like a fat loss goal or something, is like I think starting just with those first, like, shifting your mindset, right? But like trying to not allow yourself to spiral if you're having those bad body image days or, negative thoughts or things like that. Something that like I read in my journey through shifting my mindset and kind of helping myself through this was a really easy read. It's a book called, let me get this right. I wrote it down so I didn't forget it, but it's from the, I think people use the Headspace app for like meditation and stuff. And not that I'm like a huge advocate for meditation or anything, but the book kind of helps you shift your mindset in of itself. I'm looking for it in my notes here. Goodness gracious. But I think it's the guide to mindfulness and meditation through the Headspace app. But it's a specific book written by the author and the owner of the Headspace thing. But anyway, specifically with your mindset is just not allowing that one thought that comes in to like linger and affect other things. Like if you can just let that thought come in and you can think about it and be like, okay, I don't have to let this ruin my day. I can kind of notice it and move on. They compare it in the book to like driving down a highway. And I thought it was such a great analogy because you notice all of the cars on the highway, but you're not necessarily paying attention to every single car that you see and remembering everything and letting that, one car like ruin your day on like the highway, right? But you can notice it, you can let it pass you, and you can keep moving on with your day. So I just think if people are trying to like change their mindset and they're really struggling with their body image, that that might be a helpful resource for them specifically.
Yeah, I'm honestly happy you bring that up because I would add the same disclosure before I talk about meditation. I've talked about meditation a lot before, and quite frankly, it's something that it's very difficult for me personally even to keep doing consistently. It's one of those things where I always feel good, I always love when I do it, but it's just something that I've had a hard time building into my like daily routine. And I'll go through phases where I'm doing it more or less. But the Calm or the app that I use was the Calm app. I've experienced with the Headspace app as well. But there's a how to meditate course in that app that there's a lot of left lessons and a lot of things that I would assume are very similar to that book and that kind of audio kind of messaging that you can find on the Headspace app. But one thing that really clicked for me at one point was there was a meditation and kind of alluding or yeah, kind of relating to the highway analogy. It's like picture yourself, because I think the thing that makes meditation really difficult is all the competing thoughts as you're trying to meditate, and everybody experiences that. I don't want anyone to think that they're broken because when they try and meditate, they're always thinking about 10 million things. Like that's the point of meditating, and that's the point of like sitting with yourself and noticing those things, because that's how you can change that stuff, right? But there was an analogy that was very similar, and it was like imagine yourself like on the highway, but you pull off to the side of the road and then you prop a chair and you're watching all of these cars go by. And in that same breath, you're watching all of these things, but it's kind of going in and out, and you're not letting it influence your decision. Where sometimes you could be driving on the highway and somebody veers into your lane, and then all of a sudden you're pissed off and you're elevated and you're heightened, and there's these things that you're doing in response to that. Whereas instead, you're just watching things go by, and then you're picking and choosing what is important to you, or you're actually able to notice other things going on in your life. And I think this is just a relevant kind of discussion here because meditation is one of those things that people think is kind of woo-woo, but it's one of those things that I think most people, if not everybody, can benefit from at least trying for one point in their life. And whether it's using an app, using YouTube, you know, even somebody just sitting in silence for 5 minutes every single day. Like, there's a lot of things that you can learn by going through the process of doing that. And bringing it back to your point of like bad scale days, the scale's up 2 pounds and I did everything perfect. And you have these like self-destructing thoughts or these catastrophizing thoughts, same with body image days. It's like when you have the mental power and capacity and strength to kind of take that input, actually make a different decision in spite of it, when in the past that would have been the thing that led to these kind of, you know, negative thoughts and actions and things that kind of dominoed from there. That's when you start to see this stuff become a lot easier. And that's when you start to see your success rates increase, because there's these moments in your kind of journey where they're always setting you back, or they're always competing with all the other stuff that's going really well. And those are the self kind of destructing thoughts that can keep people stuck or taking step backwards after they've taken so many step forwards, instead of being able to objectively look at that and move on from that. So I'm happy you bring that up, because I think that's something that a lot of people can benefit from. And if meditation isn't on your New Year's resolutions list, like, I would make an argument that that might be something worth exploring for a lot of people.
Especially when we're trying to like break, some bad habits, like it definitely takes some mindset shifting or, some just like changing up what you're already doing. And sometimes that means like swapping something out, right? So instead of a certain habit that you're trying to break, sometimes instead of just saying, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore, and that's really, really hard to do. But if you can swap it out with a different activity or something that's going to be a little bit more health promoting, that's obviously going to set you a little bit more forward, in your success too.
Absolutely. I love this. I realize we're already coming up on an hour here. I have one more thing. We can kind of end with a 5 to 8 minute thing. Do you have enough
Sure.
time? Do you want to talk about a little something a little fun to end on? You know, you've talked about you've been an athlete kind of your whole life. You're still an athlete. You do CrossFit and you kind of lift. Like, anyone to me that moves their body intentionally is an athlete in my book. Like, you don't have to play a sport like physically to actually be labeled
Right.
an athlete. But in that same breath, for me and my coaching, recently I've found kind of a new passion for helping people expand their activity and their fitness outside of the gym. I think for a lot of people, getting into the gym in the first place is a huge barrier. It's something that is a huge feat for a lot of people. It's something that we need to start building consistency around, because if we're being real, not everybody loves to exercise. Not everybody loves doing that every week. And making that more accessible and more enjoyable is part of the battle, right? But beyond that, I think not letting your fitness die in the gym is also part of this equation at some point or another. Now, this conversation is going to be very different for somebody with a newborn at home who is still trying to work part-time and support their family and doesn't even have time to get a walk-in at the end of the day, right? But for most people in their current season of life without these unique circumstances, getting into the gym is very important, but what you do outside of the gym can be just as important. Insert hiking, insert sports, insert skiing, insert playing pickleball with your friends. Like, there's a lot of things that I think people can do outside of the gym that the gym can allow them to do really well and just increase the quality of their life. But long story short, what I'm trying to get at is for the people who are sitting here listening to this, who are, yeah, trying to be more consistent with their exercise and trying to be more fit, like, what weight do you put on getting outside of the gym just as much as getting inside the gym this time of the year? And this isn't something that I know what you're going to say, so I'm curious what you do have to say, but in your own personal experience and with your clients, like, what would you kind of like categorize this like inside outside the gym activity and how we can kind of marry those two together? And are there pros and cons of having more or less of those things in people's routines?
Yeah, no, I do love this question. I think it, for me, really means that you just live an active lifestyle in general, which is like really important, right? Because as human beings, like we've evolved and we are now in this culture of sitting inside for most of our days with artificial lights. We were not created to be in this kind of lifestyle that we live for. 80 to 90% of our life, probably, now. So I think it's just really important, even for yourself, especially if you have kids, to be a role model for your kids and to just, for your partner and like showing up for them. Like you said, it increases your quality of life to be able to not only just maybe have that whatever gym time you can allow yourself, whether it's 30 minutes, whether it's, 90 minutes of training or something like that in your day, but to also like actually walk your dogs, whether you have a backyard or not, like letting them have physical exercise or playing with your kids on the playground rather than just like maybe sitting on your phone and answering emails that you didn't get a chance to answer, but actually like playing and having that connection, that relationship with the people around you, your friends, whatnot. I just think it improves your quality of life and just adds value to your life. And obviously, when you're in the gym and you have specific goals, maybe for performance or getting stronger and whatnot, that's especially when it's more like functional movements and stuff too, really adds, that quality of life and helps you do things outside of the gym even easier and whatnot. But I think too, it just helps, balance your life a little bit more when you have hobbies outside of the gym. Obviously, the gym and CrossFit is a big hobby for me, but I do try to like go on hikes with my partner and take our dogs for walks and play with them and go play pickleball and things like that. I think it's just as important from just enjoying your life. And, if you do have body composition goals and, you're trying to get your body ready and feel confident in, a bikini or something like that for the beach or the boat or whatever for the summer, when you can do all of these other things and enjoy moving your body, it just gives you that deeper purpose for, your why for things.
Yeah, I love that. I couldn't agree more with all of that. And I'm happy you used the word balance. That wasn't in my brain at the time, but I think that's super relevant here because I think some trouble people can get themselves into sometimes if they aren't somebody that's doing a ton of activity and if they're trying to get into the gym more consistently is that act of going to the gym and the feeling and the pressure that you need to be perfect with that throughout the course of the week, or the feeling that that's the thing that is going to, kind of get you to where you want to be. It's almost like that can be taken too much to an extreme sometime, which could lead to burnout or could lead to frustrations when you don't meet the expectations that you set on yourself. And I almost think that like having activity, planned activity, whether it's as simple as going on walks daily or every other day or long walks on the weekend, like that can almost act as a buffer between the intentional activity, lifting, resistance training, CrossFit classes, group classes, yoga sessions, Pilates, whatever it is that people want to do. It's like they can have that apply to other activities and things they do outside the gym. But I don't want people to get married to the fact that they can only go to the gym and that's the thing that, or that's the movement that counts for them throughout the course of the week. And I find that people can have at least a balance between doing something else outside of the gym. It's kind of the thing that keeps them going to the gym more consistently because they start to see the benefit they get from that in the sports or in the activities or in the things that they're doing. But it's not this like do or die kind of situation that a lot of people can find themselves in. And guess what? When you miss a week of workouts, but you can look back and you got your 10,000 steps, a few days of the week because you went on walks or you went on a hike one day. Like I want people to look back and be proud of that instead of looking back on that week as like, oh, so it's kind of a failure because I didn't get X, Y, and Z in. I feel like there's an opportunity to be had for a lot of people to kind of expand what their definition of activity and physical activity and fitness means. And I find that people who have some other outlets just maybe are more enjoyable with their activity over time. And it's not something that's this daunting thing that you always have to do. There's almost a balance between having fun and also doing things that you know are important to you.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I always encourage my clients to explore, especially if they aren't in a fitness routine that they really love and maybe not as active as they want to be, is like just explore different things, try different yoga classes, try Pilates, go to the different group classes, try different gyms because every gym we know has like a different vibe to it. And, your people or, the environment that you might like is, in different capacities that you just need to explore and really figure out like what works best for you. But yeah, I mean, I think that's why I even like fell in love with CrossFit in the first place, and why it is, something that a lot of people end up enjoying is because there is so much diversity to the types of movements that you do. It's not just about being the strongest person in the room, but also being able to have really good balance and flexibility and these other like gymnastic types of skills that you can practice and get better with over time that evolve that allows evolution and progression in your fitness journey rather than just being like, okay, I increased my back squat, 10 pounds this week or something like that. It's like, oh, I could handstand walk and then go run for 400 meters and then also do like three pull-ups in the same workout. Like there's all of these other little wins of things too that is just fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I don't know why, but us as humans, we have a hard time accepting the idea of being bad at something when we start getting into things. And I've, for some reason, it's almost exacerbated when it comes to fitness, when it comes to nutrition stuff. And it's like, that's why it's easy to kind of fall back on old things or tools or Weight Watchers or a diet regimen, like, because there's some sense of familiarity with it. And chances are people had some version of success with that. And that might be familiar with them to it, where the point of doing a lot of this stuff, like working with a coach or working with an accountability partner, or joining a gym or trying a new workout class, it's like, you're not going to be good at it, and maybe you might be, or maybe you're picking up, Liv's picking up field hockey, and she finds an adult league in Wyoming. Like, there's those situations that people can find themselves in. But more often than not, you doing different workout classes, going into different cultures, doing different types of exercise modalities, trying to track food for the first, like, you're going to be bad at this shit. And I like, it's a lot easier for us to sit here and talk about it, but I know people can appreciate the fact that, like, that's where the cool shit happens. And there's so many situations that people find themselves in where they're bad at something for the first time, but very quickly they pick up on it. Very quickly they start to build some skill and some routine around it. Whether it be career or being in a relationship or being a parent for the first time, it's like, you're going to be bad at a lot of this stuff, but it's no different with health and fitness. So I almost encourage people to be a little scared or a little nervous, like trying a new class or getting into the gym for the first time and not having some type of group instructor there with you. And you're actually going to go lift and do RDLs for the first time. It's like this shit should be scary, but chances are you doing those things are going to introduce you to stuff that you're going to enjoy, you're going to get good at, and you're going to appreciate, and you're going to likely continue doing. But it's the fear of being bad at something that prevents people from getting started in the first place sometimes. So I want people to appreciate that, because you and I know can go back and forth of experiences that we felt bad. You in CrossFit, I bet your first snatch was, ugly as shit, right? But it's
So
something that you
terrible.
keep building on over time. So it's no different with health and fitness.
Yeah. No, people definitely just trying to, they're restarting their journey over again or trying something new that they haven't tried before, but have always like had a little bit of an interest for it is just remembering that's like a part of the fun, and trying to remember that that fear we can just channel to being excited about it, right? Like that's part of the fun in it is seeing your growth and that transformation. Like everyone loves a transformation too. So it's almost like, okay, well, I have this is my starting point. I can just be really excited that I'm really bad because that gives me so much opportunity for growth, in this skill or whatever you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said. You've been super generous with your time. I really appreciate all the topics we talked about today. Stuff that we've talked a little bit about on the podcast before, but not with these certain avenues. So I was really happy to chat about everything we had today. Any closing thoughts, anything you wanted to say? If not, please tell people where they can find you and all that. But I just wanted to say I had a lot of fun today, and this was a great conversation. And for two strangers a month ago, like, it turned out to be a really good podcast episode. So I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Luke. No, I'm just really excited for just people in their journeys right now. I think this is really exciting time of the year. And so hopefully something resonated with you on this podcast episode. If you're listening to it and starting some kind of health goal for 2025, I would love to connect with you. I'm most active on Instagram at Live Beyond the Table. So Live is just LIV and then Beyond the Table. So yeah, just send me a DM. I'm really active there. I would love to connect. If you listen to this episode, but even if you're just an active female, have have any questions about, menstrual cycle things, or if you have any specific performance goals or are, another fellow CrossFitter, love to connect and see what competitions you're doing or what skills you're working on in the gym this year.
I'll plug everything in the show notes as well so they can find you there too. Thanks so much, Liv. This was
Thank
fun.
you. Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to this episode. If you found value and enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media. If you do, make sure you tag me so I can say thanks. Or if you're on iTunes, scrolling down and leaving a 5-star review would be much appreciated. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Instagram at LukeSmithRD. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'll see you on the next episode.